A year after Sam Hamill's death, in what might be his last book blurb, he wrote, "Zhang'er brings us startling burial ground poems from Chinese that are striking in their perspective and elegant in style and presentation. They represent a poetic sensibility that is unique and often profound, and I read them with great surprise and gratitude." Zhang'er, a poet and opera librettist from Beijing, is the author of many books of poetry in Chinese, 2017's Closest to You, also Verses on Bird, and So Translating Rivers and Cities. She has co-edited Another Kind of Nation, an anthology of contemporary Chinese poetry, and her opera libretti in English include Moon in the Mirror and Fiery Jade, Kai Yan. Her new book is First Mountain, co-translated from her original Chinese with Joseph Donahue, and she's our guest today. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You told me the Sam blurb story at Margin Shift.
Yes.
Could you tell it for the record now?
Yeah, and I was looking for a blurb from different people, and Sam Hamill has been an acquaintance for a long time. Someone I really respect and found his poetry, actually read and found his poetry all around Washington in different parks, and all of a sudden you have tablets and here is Sam Hamill, and was profoundly moving, especially where the poetry, I don't even remember where did I see this sculpture with his poem on it, fitting the site perfectly. So he's in my mind, and also he helped me when I did the translation of Another Kind of Nation for Chinese anthology. Sam Hamill was one of the collaborating translators for the book. So I have some encounter with him, collaboration through that connection. But that was almost 10 years ago. So when I approached him, and I was really was without any expectation he would even remember me or respond to my request. But to my surprise, he's right back almost second day. So yes, this is something I can do. So I didn't get the undertone of that particular message. I said, that's great, Sam Hamill. And 2 weeks later, the blurb come. He said, here it is, I did my best. And that was that. But then almost then less than 10 days, I saw the news that he passed. So I think when he said, this is something I can do, is probably already speaking from a limited capacity already. I just didn't pick up I didn't know him personally, so I don't know what he referring to. But that was a poet to the end and still promoting younger, latercomers. So I was quite moved by this last encounter with this great giant of poetry.
Tomorrow is the anniversary of his death, first anniversary.
I see,
yeah.
I see.
Port Townsend Memories Garden, that's where you saw.
Probably, yes. Yeah, we visited there with Ricky Ducanet, probably,
right,
yeah,
right.
Visiting that, yeah.
Well, you wrote in the foreword to First Mountain that the book comes out of a burial ritual in 2001 in China for your paternal grandparents back in Shaanxi province, and that the world they came from was rural, pre-revolutionary China, which was quite distant from you.
Yes.
This must have been quite an experience.
Yes, it was surprising. To start with, it's like I'm completely unprepared. And I thought it's just one of the family things, gathering around for few old folks, older generation's requirement. It's like a family obligation. So when my parents was asking me and my brother to join them to send grandparents' ash home, I thought, wow, this is one of those things, obligations I have to do. But once I was there, I realized it is something actually a gaping hole in my life. I don't realize it is there, and discovered a new world to me, but it's clearly an old world. It's always there. I just didn't know it existed in terms of the ancestral land, and which really reflect how people lived, believed, and died, and their interpretation of death struck me almost like a window into their living. So the whole event was pretty short because there was a burial ritual lasted few days, and many clan members or villagers and all somehow distant related to me, either through my grandfather or grandmother. After we come back from the trip, after I come back from the trip, I start realize how significant those few days are. And I take a lot of notes because that's usually I do when I go to experience something. I have no idea what it is, just at least catch as much I can, use cameras, use notes, photographs. So since I come back from the trip, I researched for 3-4 years about into the funeral ritual, into Shanxi province where my hometown is, into their culture aspect of different aspect of the culture. And while I research and I write poems, I guess it's one way of for me to understanding a culture or a world around me. Writing poetry is the way to do it.
You know, I'm here to get the story, obviously, but you tell it so well in poetry, so I'm hoping that the interview can be a mix of you telling the story and then reading poems that, you know, also give us an angle on the story. One part that's really important to note is that your parents were, quote, ardently secular communists. And so this ritual was your first exposure to more traditional religious beliefs. You said it was culture shock and that an entire unfamiliar and ancient belief system was presented to you in the span of a few days. How were you able to write so lucidly about that experience? Was it because that happened in 2001? The book comes out, what, 18 years later? You had time to do it right. You had time to do your research. It's remarkable, the feeling that I'm right there as I'm reading these poems and also getting a look into that culture, which, you know, reminds me of many different cultures, reminds me of indigenous cultures. And then also maybe you can address the fact that your parents, you know, they didn't grow up with that, and they've abandoned, essentially they've abandoned that that what we might call traditional thinking of the culture.
Yeah, and it's a complicated story. And the first of all, I want your listener and the reader know the poem you are seeing is translated by American poet Joseph Donahue. So this is a third layer removed from the initial experience. And the translation collaboration with Joe is like take 10 years. So the poem was written, the event happened in 2001, and the book, originally the Chinese book, was published in Taiwan, actually, is in 2005. And I start thinking about translating it. And sometimes when you write something, even the book come out, you not necessarily know the significance until years later, you hear from other people's feedbacks and other poets' comments on the work. So 2008, when I start collaborating with Joe Donahue, so there's second layer removing from the original experience. So through these reflections, and from the initial notes to research to my writing and then my transcription of it to Joseph Donahue's translation, so their lucidity or complicity, clear-eyedness, maybe because it filtered in through this process. So clearly the reader right now reading is a work of two poets living in America, working in the second decade of 21st century's work. So there is a time lacking, which is time compressed from 2000 years Chinese burial ritual to 2018's print. So there's a kind of all showed in one book. It's kind of a time collapsed in this book. So I'm glad you think it works. I mean, it's always a tentative for me. I just don't know how my initial reflection on the experience versus Joe's interpretation, reflection on the Chinese transcription and then translation works. So it is always, border crossing is always risky. So this one seems to be successful in a way, at least to you. This seems to be, I hope it's continue to convey meanings and convey significance to readers who are not Chinese, who are not my parents or my grandparents. Yeah.
And your parents, they're not into this.
Yeah, my parents are saying that I would not say they're abandoned their tradition, because there's a bigger political environment surrounding Chinese society. As in one of the poems, was saying the Chinese tradition kept recorded on the tablets, on the funeral ground tablets, but significantly, the last 100 years, there's none. So you can imagine what happened to Chinese history and tradition. It seems the 20th century is really a breaking of the Chinese tradition, old way of living. I think Communist Party's rule is one of the factors, but the Western, the whole idea of encounter of Chinese culture, encounter Western culture, I think probably you can vaguely say that's the reason the break happens. After all, communist is a Western ideology. So the clash is so big, and the industrialization capitalists versus Confucianism or Taoism, that fracture probably break the tradition, and communism is part of it. So my parents both are Communist Party's members. My mom just passed away, so this is another death I will need to address. I mean, in the middle of another long work, hopefully that will be something else come out maybe 20 years from now.
The ritual won't be the same.
No, it won't be. But yeah, but I don't know what it's going to be. So this book is First Mountain. Maybe we need to shift the symbols and metaphors to something beyond the mountains. Yeah.
My condolences.
Yeah, thank you.
4 years is a pretty quick time to get it, that story mm-hmm. into a book. So the first part of it was pretty quick. I mean, as publishing goes. Tell us about the Book of Rights and how that was a source for this book.
Book of Rights is one of the oldest book. I would say maybe I'm not a Chinese classic scholar. I have to say that because my training is in Western science. So, but over the years, I've been read and study, really educate myself about Chinese classics. Book of Rights, we pronounce it Li. It's a book of a collecting of rituals for all occasions. So there's one of the five canons of Chinese classics. So early on, there's a book of history that is assumingly has even older of pre-dynasty doctrines of all the early, before dynasty, early makings of the Chinese history of tribals, leaders, and ancient wars, and all that. And book, it, which was much more, how do I say, elaborating history in a way you associate with history, stories and teachings. But Book of Rites is really cut and dry, almost like some chapters in Bible that tell you, you do this and you do that.
Mm-hmm. I don't prescriptive.
Know. Yeah, prescriptive. And how you, what age you do what rites. And the function of Book of Rites, I think, is a rule to get the people from probably from different tribe of a correct way. By Confucius' time, that's the correct way to carry out the Zhou Li. It's to under the first loosely collected Zhou. It's not really the first dynasty, but pre-dynasty Zhou period. And that is supposed to be right way of doing things. And one of the Confucius' major official function is to teach how to practice all the rites. And funeral rites is one of the rites, and dictate pretty much what type of clothing you're supposed to wear, what type of, down to the point, what type of material you should use for the clothing. And so, some of the rituals I witnessed is still practicing that teaching, yeah.
So it's fair to say then your grandparents were practicing Confucianism?
I mean, use the word Confucianism is really a dominant culture for Han Chinese. Being educated people, my grandfather being educated people, he feel he is, I would say, he's followed the doctrine, not rebel, he's not communist. But even my grandfather himself, he's the first generation of Chinese who went to Western education. He's majoring in chemistry, chemical engineering, if today you would call it. But at that time, it's really rudimentary. First Western school open to Chinese youth who has classical trainings. And I would say my grandfather still have classical trainings, which by definition maybe is Confucian, classical teachings and learnings. Mm-hmm. But Confucian is not necessarily a religion like a Western sense. It is just an education system. You'll go through that. And the generation before him, if you go through the schooling of the Confucian, the next level is you participate in the civil service national exam. So you'll be awarded, if you pass it, you're awarded government official titles. But I think it's by the time my grandfather come of age, that national civil servants exam is abandoned. And instead, Western education come in. So he went on to study chemistry and has a technical degrees and start almost, even though the degrees in chemistry and technical degrees, but was used by local warlords or rulers as if he passed university entrance tests of the Confucian style. So he awarded official jobs, not really related to chemistry, but administrative jobs because he had an education. And women's education is another issue. I don't know if we even have time to go there. So,
But there you do allude to the book, those tablets that recorded the generations exclude the women.
Oh yeah, definitely. Right, right. Yeah, a woman is not considered full citizen, and they are properties. And for majority part of Chinese past history, so when they were young, they belonged to their father. When they're married, they belong to their husband. When they had getting old, they belong to their son. So the male in their life are the decision-makings, right, makers, yeah.
I'd love if you could read from the book. From Prelude, Part 2 is on page 6. And I think that's maybe 3 pages, but that'd be a great place to start, I think.
The thing is, for my reading, because my original poem is written in Chinese, I usually read my poem in Chinese. I guess I want her to to read in English here.
Whatever you'd like. If you'd like to read it in the Chinese, I'm happy to read the English if you like.
Yeah, can I go to get
Absolutely.
My Chinese book?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all right.
So prelude 2, 引子。五星级酒店宴会厅，你说问题是要把自己逼上死路。第一行让他没有喘气的可能，再写，就要另一层次的命。调要高，写在纸上像刻下去的金石。我有我的理解，命是水，时间。诗也是流动铺展，苗插进土里越长越高，收获青草一片。收获，他说风格上要摒弃浪漫主义，那么这些情爱意义上的情诗，紫竹院和丁香，雪和空白的重量落在哪儿？形而上的抒情，知识分子写作，民间，第三条道，南坡，我们起早登山，找不到道，也不知道找到以后还要找什么。更早起的站在河边看我们，上山不怕，直上，山顶是我的麦，哦，他的麦地是我们的目的。相机，摄像机，纯粹玩票也要名副其实的爬，想不出他怎么能单份上帝。没路的地方长了白杨，再往上都是松，松鼠和鸟，名叫三月六，可今天不是三月六。还听见泉水低调的在另一个层次叮叮咚咚。下山的时候，太阳扫过它绿绿的麦，一间搭一间，瓦顶在山脚下，展平一副爱的理念。也想搂住幸福的肩，却没有，只把手从裤兜里掏出，背到身后。家院不动，斜射光线下有凸有枯，呈现百年不动的庄重。
Two, in the banquet room of a five-star hotel, you say the trick is to push oneself into the path of death. In the first line, let there be no possibility of breathing. Then write. Then write until writing is to ask for life on a new level. The pitch has to be high, until what is written on the page is like what is carved into metal and stone. But I have my own idea. For me, life is simply water, as is time, as is poetry. Flowing, spreading. Shoots break the soil. A patch of green, a harvest. You say, we must destroy all sentimentality in our style. And these lyrics of romantic love, of lilacs, snow, the purple bamboo pavilion, and the crush of nothingness, transcendental lyricism, intellectual writing, folk style, the third way. South slope of Nanpo, up early, can't find the way. Not sure what we're looking for. Someone awake and up before us, up ahead of us, along this river. Don't be afraid. Go straight up. My wheat field is there. Okay, his wheat field is our destination. Camera, video recorder, we are crawling on all fours. How could he ever have hauled a crop's worth of manure up here? No trail. Further up, white poplar, pines, squirrels, and birds. The bird's name is Third Month the Sixth. Today is not Third Month the Sixth. Also now, the low-keyed drip, drip, drip of a spring just below us. Later, coming down from the hill, the sun brushes past us, past the green, green wheat, roofs of houses so close, standing shoulder to shoulder at the foot of the hill. Lines of tile, as in a painting of perfect rational love, of perfect communal happiness, where we would be walking, arms draped over shoulders. Instead, I take my hands out of my pockets and fold them behind my back. Ancestral courtyard, all stillness and elongated light, motionlessness of 100 years. So this line, this mini stanza here, line, two lines in the near the beginning of two, then write until writing is to ask for life on a new level.
Mm.
Can you see what inspired that, or can you elaborate on that?
Yes and no. I don't know. These lines that are coming out of a conversation with some friends on poetry, what would be writing poetry means. So sometimes when you're writing, as you can see here, the scenes shift from the banquet rooms and to Beijing parks, and then to this particular moment, my brother and I was climbing this foothills in my grandparents' family's ground, and so going up, somehow because of that effort, you're heaving and bracing, and you don't know where you're heading. Really, it's a new environment, and somehow possibly remind me of writing poetry, and it is hefty load. And you have a lot of vague energies, but you don't know where you're heading.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what you're writing.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow, only thing you know is keep on writing. And possibly you will find something reality this life doesn't offer. I mean, for poets, it's always ambivalent what they are doing. I mean, like you're saying, who is paying us what they are doing? But everybody has this urge, you just keep on writing. And sometimes vaguely, okay, recognition somewhere, but it's not that. That is really second, tertiary thought. It's not why you're making an effort every day, sit on your desk writing. And so I think that was probably is one way of thinking of writing poetry is
that the purpose of poetry is to deepen your consciousness.
Deepen conscious awareness, maybe. That living fuller, and because everybody's living about the same, eat shit and doing things. But somehow, if you are not satisfied, that...
And I have to say, when you do that deed, you have a very nice view looking out the window here.
Exactly.
Of the ravine and the evergreens and what have you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
In part three of Prelude, you write, words are just a ditch we dig to direct the flow of common sense.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I know. I don't know. I mean, I think the whole book is a process of self-questioning and reflecting as a leading to all these ambivalent issues in our life. Somehow, at least momentarily, when I was at the hometown ground, you feel... unreasonably, I don't know why, you feel you're home. You feel there's a certain definition and kind of firmness to the ground. I think that's probably why I put all these doubts, all these questions in life at the prelude, leading to the journey.
Some answers, maybe.
Yeah, at least momentarily.
Right.
Yeah, a firmness feel...
You know, I look at this, that line that stanza that I just mentioned, words are just a ditch to dig, a ditch we dig to direct the flow of common sense. And I'm noticing something mm-hmm. in the lineation. And I'm guessing Joseph mm-hmm. might be, might mm-hmm. it might be interesting to have him in here to talk about this. But the A in R in that first line and the A in a ditch we dig mm-hmm. are lined up. And, you know, this is sort of an indented kind of lineation here. So this is an open form kind of thing. And then the T in two, direct flow, which starts the next line, comes right under the T in ditch. So it's lined up in a way with those sounds, which is very, very interesting to see that. And, you know, it's a technique that I've used in my own work. Mm. How far do you indent? How about doing it like that? Maybe that brings out the music. I don't know. Were you, when you went over the lineation, did you just give Joe a free hand, or what was the process with that?
Yeah, I think it's very much of his choice, and I have questions sometimes, because in Chinese, the line is pretty up, line to the right, occasionally at the end, sometimes I break through a little bit.
To the left, you mean?
Yeah, to the left.
Yeah.
Yeah, to the left. Right. So, and one of the constant issues in translating, I sense, is that my lines, the Chinese is much denser as a language per se. There's a lot of things in you can put in one line because of the way the language is structured. And grammatical word is absent, it's indicated, especially in this particular book. And I try to use more abbreviated style of talking because trying to indicate him the voice I hear in this trip is archaic Chinese, which is much more briefer in writing as in modern Chinese. A lot of words in modern Chinese, you have two syllables, you have two characters, but in archaic Chinese, it's only one. And the grammatical words orientation is slight, the arrangement, syntax is different too. So, it's kind of oral language. In oral language, you don't have to always using full sentences just because there's face to face. So immediately have an intimacy with the page or my imaginary readers. So my lines is so very jumpy and a lot of questions without question, only indicated by question mark, but no additional words. So Joe has to find a way to elongate the English rather than one line translating into another, sometimes one line translating into a stanza. So, it seems that's not enough. He wants to leave rooms of a breathing, of open space. And there are some poems he double lined every single line. In the end, I think it's a compromise because the publisher, this book already more than 200 pages. Originally, they were thinking about Zephyr Prize is the prize who published all his translations side by side with in Chinese. This book is clearly, there's no room for Chinese. If 200 page plus English text, you have 200 page of Chinese will be
a fat book.
Yeah, it's fat book.
And expensive.
It's a break the norm for the distributors too. So in the end, we didn't include the Chinese text. But I think from the people's response, I think Joe's technique worked. People, especially for people who are not familiar with Chinese culture and the breathing room, make people linger on the line a little more and think, little double back to trying to read, second read. So it's due to his skills and in management. Yeah.
In this book, the English edition, it's page 81, Warm the Tomb.
Warm the Tomb.
Yeah, that I would love to give listeners a good idea of the scene in your grandparents' village.
Yeah, where did it go?
And of course the male descendants are the ones who start out in this in the English.
Yeah, well, right. In Chinese, it's 暖坟, 望里嫂, 嫂三嫂, 儿孙嫂, 祖辈应得扫进去，干净不干净是另外的问题。女儿呢，扫三扫，望外扫，带着福分出门，把这条树苗传了多少代，企图给我象征，而不是疑问，也不光是日常的忙忙碌碌，象征传来传去，然后端来炭盆、黄纸。把坟室烧暖，让我住，你住，爷爷奶奶，谁能分给我幸福和适当的热度？两张纷至的青石，官座，70年分享的婚账睡不够。我哭，你也哭，即使他天天为你铺床，帐子里的事情没人告诉我。儿孙满堂，儿孙满堂，幸福吗？从不拉手，吵嘴又摘不完豆角和韭菜。婚事由你自己选择。奶奶这种说法有点像命运和外面的星星。故事记不清了，结论明澈，在杨树枝上响铃一样拍巴掌。摇啊摇，你把我捧在手心；扫啊扫，扫出门。你看我还做梦，梦见狐仙像星星从烟囱里升起，一跳一跳，从上坡亮到下坡，为你们点起长明灯，不得不离去的路。
Warm the tomb. The male descendants brush the dirt into the tomb. Each gets three strokes to gather and intensify the virtues of the dead. The broom has a strip of red cloth. The female descendants brush the dirt out of the tomb. Each gets three strokes to take the blessings of the dead with them in their marriages. Their broom also has a strip of red cloth. Red cloth terrifies evil spirits. From how far back has this broom been handed down? The broom to establish some kind of symbol, not to stir up questions. This is not some routine tidying up. A symbol passes on. Now, with both hands, we carry a pot of live coals and yellow paper to warm the tomb. Let me stay here and let the two of you return to life, Grandpapa, Grandmama. Who else ever offered me such happiness and kept me warm? 70 years together. Haven't you slept together long enough? Spirit tent, wedding tent. Now two gray stone slat biers. I'm crying. He turned down the bed. Every night for you. Nobody ever tells me about things inside the tent. Sons and grandsons fill the hall. Sons and grandsons fill the hall. Were you all that happy? You never held hands. You quarreled and bickered. Yet there are always string beans and Chinese chives to pick. Marriage, you said, it's all up to you, the way you put it. Grandma made it sound like fate, like the stars. The story of your lives is quite fuzzy in places, but the end is all too clear. Leaves on the poplar tree branches clapped like a loud bell. Swing, swing, you held me in your arms. Sweep, sweep, you swept me out the door. You see, I'm still dreaming. Perhaps about the fox fairy who rises shining from the chimney, a bounce, then another bounce up over the hill, brightening all the way down the other side. Perhaps that fox fairy you once told me about now lights up the eternal light for you, illumines the road of your departure. And there are footnotes that I'll read. I didn't want to interrupt the flow of the poem, but as I was reading the book, I read the footnotes along with the poem. The day before the burial, the underground chamber of the tomb is cleaned and warmed with charcoal fire in a clay pot. Close family members take part in the intimate ceremony. And the next note is, the clay pot and yellow paper are used in the funeral ritual. The clay pot is a symbol of the living, a versatile utensil used for cooking, eating, washing, and storage of food to sustain life, which will be dramatically thrown to the ground and smashed into pieces by the surviving offspring at the beginning of the funeral procession. Yellow paper is a special kind of unbleached rough paper that sometimes has prayers or underworld money printed on it. They are burned in abundance at various stages of the ritual to send money and prayers to the dead, showing the living's respect for the dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is pretty old tradition and old belief, and the passing through once the life to death, you go through a purification of fire. And I think a lot of ancient cultures have that still. You purify through fire. And it seems that fire is also a intermediate stage passing, transmit messages. And mm-hmm. so, for example, if I want these words, this book, for my grandparents to hear, I need to burn the book, which I haven't done. I've saved that. Well, next time I visit, maybe I will do that, just to honor the old tradition. So they will hear me if I burn them. That's the idea. So the living and dead is almost kind of, yeah, I don't want to explain, trivialize it. It's a complicated system that people somehow just take it for granted, that that way of thinking. And you don't know, nobody, at least in my life, nobody teaching me exactly what it is, but then you just copy whatever everybody's doing. It's not quite Taoism, it's Confucian don't really doing things like that. So there's a Confucian rites, and then there's even ancient, they call it folk religion, that's still very much of alive in China, Chinese influence spheres. In Taiwan, you will see people burn things in the middle of the street on different occasions. It's mm-hmm. part of the sun things, offerings to gods and goddesses.
How far back does it go?
I don't know. I don't know. Thousands of years. And some people say related to early religion, that passing through down the Silk Road of worshipping fire. Mm-hmm. So fire is still play a very important role. And integrated into Buddhist too. Burn incense, burn candles. So if I'm an evolution, teaching evolution in biology, possibly we understand the power of fire as a species way before we branch out into different groups. So the fire is life-giving and purification, I guess. That's, and passing through death. Yeah.
Paper Clothes for the Dead is on page 99. It's also quite stunning.
Yeah.
99 in this book.
Yeah.
Is that book available, the this book in Chinese? Can you find it on eBooks?
I'm afraid it's probably out of print. It's by Tangshan Publisher in Taipei. The work was, as you commented, it came out very quickly. It's also because that year, 2005, I was invited to Taipei International Poetry Festival. So I'm from mainland China and never been to Taiwan before 2005. So I was really honored to be invited there to Taiwan as American poets. And maybe as Chinese, but anyway, so I was there. And so I thought, well, maybe is it possible, because all my book published in overseas or in China, I said maybe it's, if it's possible, publishing in Taiwan. So the organizer, Hong Hong, a very influential poet in Chinese poetry circle, approached a Taiwan publisher, Tang Shan, which is always published poetry, a very small publisher. They said, sure. And the editor was really taken by the manuscript. He set everything up. At that time was pre-internet, and was kind of a difficult, well, I guess there were emails, but was not as convenient, and set the whole text in quickly before the festival. So that book came out that way. And Taiwan, as people know, is very much of a maintain the tradition of Chinese traditional way. I think they have claimed to have better preserved the Chinese culture than the mainland China. And and then this book was published in complex Chinese characters in Taiwan, as all books are. So I thought it just fitting for this book is particularly, yeah. So I don't know if it still can be found on Bolaike, one of the distributors there, which is possible, yeah. But I only has two copies left.
And one of them is going to your ancestors before long.
I know. I want to make sure that I have a copy. Unless someone wants to redo the prints, it's probably going to be gone. Yeah, like a lot of things. So you want me to read this paper close for the dead, talking about going through fires. But before the fire, you have paper folded materials. 纸扎, 金山, 银山, 还有其他很多。 坐着蹦蹦车从县城下乡, 这些多彩的幸福憧憬闪亮, 并给沿间抹上一纸喜气, 仙桃鲜花, 挑罗, 紫和白相间, 让我想起北海的藤萝, 迷惑过少年的心, 在迷惑前面的小鬼, 有这样一条危险的路, 小鬼挡路, 等着他们, 所以需要如此亮丽的风景, 鲜花如云, 鲜果遍地, 德行的高帆, 白纸黑字, 金山银山, 山下宫阙, 端正, 永恒, 闭眼金嘴的仙鹤, 要去哪? 要去哪? 去哪? 摘星星, 捧月亮, 飞向不穿衣服的太阳, 结实的翅膀, 纸翅膀, 骨灰的分量, 抵得上这支记账的笔, 夹在大哥耳后, 先下蹦蹦车, 摆进灵棚, 风吹黄土, 吹动鲜花, 无法想象的幸福, 贴紧这些红花绿叶, 折磨我, 是一种安慰, 是小时候你讲的故事, 不再长毛毛虫, 院里的大柳树锯了, 杏树锯了, 十几年的葡萄藤锯了, 便是我粗糙的童年, 毛毛虫, 昙花是个例外, 你梦里一对花开, 说我孙子孙女能考上大学, 一夜昙花, 却又有磨不完的豆浆, 一屋邻居, 像现在我们围在供桌旁, 摸摸这儿, 动动那儿, 有礼貌地想你, 说着吉利话, 你的婚事, 奶奶就不管了, 耳坠叮咚, 袖口三层绣花, 找个老家人, 就能让我守在旁边, 都经过, 生或者死, 包括在你腮边清香, 像起起落落的124太极拳, 我们学了忘, 忘了学, 礼义春秋, 堆满, 挂满, 美文美字, 飘呀飘, 不会下雪吧? 不会下雪吧?
Paper clothes for the dead. It is so cold. Take out gloves, take out coats, gloves, sweaters from the luggage, put all on the shirts.
Oh, actually, we are reading a different poem.
I was going to say.
Yeah, it's a different poem.
Which poem did you read?
The paper, paper fold. It's the poem right after the warming the tomb. Yeah. It's also paper fold. It's I can't believe the two. Yeah, paper crafts.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll start again. Paper craft, gold mountain, silver mountain, with many others. A moped with a trailer. A road out of town into the country. These multicolored hopes for happiness shine, these handiworks of jubilation offered to the realm of the dead. Even light up the young world. Celestial peach, celestial flower, a paper net with purple and white streamers. They remind me of the wisteria umbra in a Beihai park. They bewilder the youth, oh so romantic. They bewilder the small devils out for mischief as souls make their way to the next world. It's a dangerous road. Souls need bright colored scenes to bamboozle the small devils blocking the way. The souls need flowers like clouds, those heavenly fruits covering the land, high fluttering virtue, white paper, black characters, gold mountain, silver mountain, the palace at the base, solemn and eternal, not a bit like the bungalows in the mixed family compound. Heavenly blue-eyed, gold-beaked crane, where are you going? To harvest stars, to cup the moon, to fly naked to the naked sun? Strong wings, paper wings. What instrument can assess these ashes? The pen tucked behind the ear of elder brother? The moped slows. The sculpted paper is moved into the spirit tent. Wind blow over the yellow earth. Sway the celestial flowers. Stick close to me, you red petals, green leaves. An unimaginable happiness tortures one who has yet to compose a kind of consolation like the story you told me when I was young. The big willow in the yard cut down, the apricot tree cut down, the grapevine only a decade old cut down. What's left of my rough childhood? A few hairy caterpillars. Tanhua, broad-leaved, epiphyllum, only you persist. And grandma, you dreamed of two ephemeral blossoms, concluding that your grandson and granddaughter would win a place at the university. One night's ephemeral blossom, Tanhua, and now the endless grinding of soybeans. Neighbors fill the room then, like now we surround the altar. Touch here, move things there, politely thinking of you, using only good words, remembering your oracular admonishments. Grandma's not going to arrange your marriage. Gentle click of earrings, three-ply sleeves embroidered trim. Look for a hometown man, one who presumably will stick by my side. All things pass through life and death, like the scent on your cheek, like the up, up, down, down, the 124 movements of shadow boxing, learned, forgotten now, learned again. Ritual, divination, history, write them out, unfurl them on high, and everywhere, the old glorifying texts, the beautiful, glorious words, they flutter, they float in the air. Is it about to snow?
Is it about to snow?
You know, snow in a dream book I have at the house, it's a book that has as many images as you can possibly imagine, and I don't know the exact, I'm paraphrasing what they say in this book about snow, but it's about a spirit, some kind of spiritual occasion, which is interesting.
Mm. Yeah, and that particular snow in the poems is, of course, it's big middle of the winter I would say this, probably October, no, what do you call this? November, so it was quite cold in the mountain and overcast, and then all these kind of banners, it's black ink on white paper, a lot of them fluttering around. You feel there's snow might be there, and almost like people, I'm not sure about the snow you're mentioning, but it feels that there are some celestial beings up there sending messages, and in a way that is so unusual in this world, beautiful.
Yeah. How were your own beliefs about life and death changed by the experience of going there and having this ritual and this crash course in your traditional, your ancestral beliefs? How did it change things?
It's kind of, I don't know. It's a good question. And I think it's make me feel there's a sequence in things. You feel almost you're part of a collective that you're never aware of. So that is both scary and comforting. And this Western idea of individuality is clearly challenged, because you go to a village, you have whole village people look like your grandmother. Another village, everybody look like grandfather. You feel, okay, I'm kind of part of this, and genetically I'm really, really part of this. But in the meantime, the individuality that Western culture, as well as a poet, always strive for yourself. You feel, where am I? Kind of, in a way, lost. So it is difficult for me to pinpoint what exactly it means, but offer some context for my existence. So it is feels like in the whole world of randomness, there's a reason I'm here. So I don't know if that's a belief system or it is affirmation. That's a word. Affirmation that there's a reason. Even though we know the causal relationship is really arbitrary, human way of rationalize everything. But at least temporarily, when I think about that village, I feel I'm on firm ground. And probably it is even increasingly more important as one get older, you feel your courage start to sagging. And every time I think about that, okay, my doubts, my weakness, my arbitrariness, maybe there's a reason to be there. And there are, because, yeah, I guess that's what it is. Open the door to my later work, actually. At first, originally, I don't think classical Chinese, really, I really don't have a way to handle them. And given my limited training and my time, and living in US, but through this book, research for this, I feel that I can get a lot of things, and the tradition still matters a lot in the language I'm using, and in the way things are done, even in the syntax of the words. So it's embedded there, and I start a whole lot of other projects now, going back to traditional teachings to see where it's come from. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This book comes across to me like a key book in a poet's life. Does it feel like that to you?
I would say probably a core would be a way of thinking about it. I feel it's nourishing for me, rather than I'm showing something to other people. Mm-hmm. So it's like a solidifying my core in a way, without making it doctrine or dogma, but without having to deny my Chinese-ness. And I know what is Chinese-ness in my mind, at least with the limited depths I have. Yeah, rather than communists products from mainland China without reading much book at all, barely can consider illiterate. Because we go through trainings, and then I immediately jump onto the medical trainings, scientific things. So I always feel there's a lacking, but this book seems to make me feel, okay, I can reach that. I know where the core is. Yeah.
Really grateful for your time today.
Yeah, thank you for asking wonderful questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, to think about this.